Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey guys, we'll get to the show in a minute. Just wanted to give you a heads up on Red Men Plus, our subscription service. It's like Netflix for Reds. If you sign up there, you'll get even more Liverpool content, bonus features, documentaries, interviews, and tons more available both in video and podcast form. So yeah, redmenplus.com. Check it out. I hope you enjoy this show.
Hello everyone, it is the Red Men Podcast. I am Paul Machin, Steve Hall and Chris Pajak join me in body, in partial mind and very minimally in spirit. It's been a trying week for a variety of reasons. We'll go into a lot of that on Podcast Extra over on Plus after this podcast, when we can say things that we're not allowed to say in the public versions of the Red Men Podcast and stuff, so make sure you're involved with all that. We've got a kickoff question. We're going to be talking about the fact that Liverpool scored 9 goals against Bournemouth, and have a rage that we didn't score 10. So you've got to be angry about something, haven't you, at all times.
We should have scored 14.
We should have scored 14. Yeah, God, pricks. What are they doing?
Who do they think they are?
Who do they think they are? We're going to talk about the remainder of the transfer window, and maybe a bit on Newcastle and the schedule between now and the World Cup, if we've got time for all of that. But yeah, plenty to get through is what I'm driving at here on this Wednesday. Tuesday afternoon? It's been a long week already in my head. Tuesday afternoon. Kick-off question comes from Dom Hammond.
You may as well come and watch on YouTube if you're on Twitter as well, by the way.
Told you to forget. 100%. If you're on Twitter, go over to youtube.com/theredmenTV and check us out. What's the most iconic Liverpool shirt number?
Good question, Dom.
Chris immediately and quite dismissively gave me an answer to this, so I'm going to ask you, Steve.
7 is the one that sprung to mind, just because of Kenny.
And Kenny alone.
Pretty much just because of the Dalglish thing. Yeah, probably 7 for Kenny, because it's with other clubs, like 9 is like the be all and end all.
Like Liverpool.
And that is they're the two answers, aren't they? That's spring. Most clubs will say 7 and 9. Uh-huh. I think if you ask United fans.
What, 8?
I don't think anyone really is 8 that iconic.
I mean, the greatest footballer to ever play for Liverpool.
But Buddy Welch has.
Naby Keita, State God.
And then we'll ask you before it.
Or even Leonardo and State God, damn it.
Don't forget him.
I think it's 7. I think just mainly for the Kenniness of it.
Yeah.
Suarez for a bit. And I think Milner, people just laugh at James Milner, but James Milner's won everything wearing that shirt. So I still think it's probably 7, just because those famous pictures of Kenny facing the wrong way, head over his shoulder.
The only photo of Kenny Dalglish, seemingly.
Yeah, that was all. I think it's probably 7, with an honourable shout out to Bobby Firmino.
Yeah, what?
9.
Okay, sad. You know what? It's mad that I don't even think of Bobby as being a 9. I know
it's literally in a song.
I think of him as being being 11, particularly either. No, I know you agree on the 7 thing, right?
There's no other answer. For people our age either, to be honest with you, because Kenny was everything when we were kids, and that's kind of what it was. So maybe if you asked a younger person who didn't grow up with Kenny wearing the number 7, then they'd say something different.
See, I mean, and what you're saying is right. I think if someone was 5 years older than us, because I never really watched Kenny play footy, I probably watched him maybe once in the flesh, as a footballer. I think there's a lot of people who would answer eight because of Gerrard, because he was...
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying, isn't it? It depends when you grow up and who's there. And we grew up in the Kenny Dalglish era, whether you watched him or you heard your dad talk about him.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's about him being the number seven, Liverpool's number seven. And obviously, was Keegan the number seven before him? And obviously, he was a European Footballer of the Year and all that type of stuff. So that seven went from Keegan to Dalglish, and then we grew up. And so obviously, for us, it was probably going to be seven. And he is the best player that's ever played for Liverpool Football Club, Kenny Dalglish. You hear people who've seen both, and they it's not even a question to them, it's Kenny Dalglish.
Yeah.
23's in the mix, just for Fowler and Carragher.
I said that as well.
And Emre Can, obviously.
Shout out to Luis Diaz and Cheyran Shaqiri. The lad, Hotel Anfield, I love it, but that was Luis Diaz, because that's their fingers, they're number 23, and they've got all the shirts. But I think that, again, of my era, the 23 from Fowler to Carragher was a big one, really. But you can't look. I think the big seven flag on the cop as well. Like, we haven't really. Have we got any other flags with a big number? I just don't think there's any in there.
Obviously, the Barnes is heavily with the tennis. I think that I feel like, I can't remember, it's the Barnes thing or a Barnes t-shirt I designed ages ago. I always get them mixed up. But yeah, like the Barnes in the 10 is very much there as well. And again, that, we were talking about this being an era thing. I think, again, if you're a few years older than us, 10 might be your answer because of just how good John Barnes was. I think I agree. I'd look, 7 is the...
Do we have a 10 now?
No.
Sadio was.
Yeah, Sadio left it.
I wonder if Mo can make 11, just like this thing... Mm. There might be kids. Well,
Trent hasn't been a number 66
as well.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a really interesting point. And I've said this before. You know, I loathe the fact that he's 66, and I blame the Anfield rap for this as well. By the way, like, if you're genuinely, what they told us when we were in Boston, we were doing this, and I went, "What the fuck are they doing? Don't give him a fucking mural with that number on the back, because he's going to be stuck with it forever off the back of it. I would pay to have that painted over myself." If he wants to move to a better number than 66, genuinely, it does my absolute...
All his socials are like 66. He's branded. He's just,
I know, but he's rich. He's
like Carra 23. He's just... he's 1066.
But I got the general impression that Jamie Carragher didn't care enough to want another number, whereas, I don't know, 66. Like, would Trent turn down another one of the 1 to 11 numbers, a big one? If he got offered to him, like, if he got offered the 8, would he turn that down to keep 66?
Probably, I think,
because that fucking mural, he would.
I think by now, yeah. By the way, very, very quick shout out for one, just as an outside shout. We've had some iconic goalkeepers. There was a stage where the best one, our goalie wasn't wearing one for a while, like, remember, like, for some reason, but now Mignolet just didn't wear one either, did he? But now Alisson's took it, so, like, the Clemens to Brucey to now to Alisson, one's an iconic one as well.
I think that obviously, because numbers didn't really matter prior to the Premier League, so you'd have lads would wear, you'd say such and such was it, Liam Rush was the number 9, but there's games where he didn't wear the number 9 for Liverpool, particularly after he came back, you know, like famously the FA Cup 89, I think he comes off the bench, doesn't he, and he's wearing a different number than that. I can't remember, is it 12 or something? But yeah, look, I think the 9 is a close second to 7, because in terms of how beloved they are to Liverpool, 8 is Gerrard. You know, it's iconic to Steven Gerrard. 10 is pretty much iconic to John Barnes, and obviously other people have worn it, of course.
Shout out Sadio Mane.
And shout out Sadio Mane, definitely. And in 10 years' time, 15, 20 years' time, he'll be held up in the same way that people talk about John Barnes. But that number 9 means it actually transcends, and that's maybe that way. A slight difference to this is 7 will forever be Kenny
and Robbie Keane.
but 9 is like, well, there's always a great number 9 at Liverpool.
9 is like the Olympic torch before the ceremony. It's literally handed over and someone else great takes it, whereas 7, there's been a gap here and there of actually, you know, someone being fit to lace that.
Harry Kewell, Nigel Clough, Vladimir Smica. Nine, though, has been tainted a little bit as well.
Andy Carroll.
Benteke. Diouf. Aspas. Lambert.
Can't put over here. But when you consider it's like...
No, I'm not disparaging.
Rush,
I'm just
no, yeah, yeah, but like Rush to Fowler, very briefly Anelka. Fernando Torres being a big one, and now obviously Bobby being another big one to have it.
To be fair, 7, right? I'll be honest, it is literally just kind of English because I'm looking at these names. Luis Suarez, obviously.
Go on, watch out. There's a poll in the chat. He's a big fan of these polls, is our Joe.
Loves a poll.
I'd love to be able to show you what the poll looks like, actually. Here we go. Most iconic number poll started by Joe a whole 5 minutes ago. We've had 122 votes on this. 7 is winning with 52%. 8 is second with 24%. Number 9 has 13%. And 66 has 11%. There you go.
It's definitive, if nothing else.
Yeah, definitive.
Yeah, that we won.
It's like when you see those adverts, like, we've worked out, scientists have proven this, and it's got... Poll
six people of nine.
Yeah, 300 people were polled, and I was like, I don't think that's enough to be able to say unequivocally that your toothpaste is doing the business. Like, let's be perfect.
Come back to the end of the show.
Maybe.
You can't remember that one on Twitter. You've got no chance of remembering
that. Chance that that's happening. Ashley Frith is live in the comments. Says 8 for Gerrard has to be. He was my idol for my whole childhood. Face Health also has got to be 7. And John Sass points out Damien Placide was number 28. Not to forget Stephen Warnock, Danny Ings, and now Fabio Carvalho.
Christian Paulson, though, as well.
Yeah. Good shout out. Good googling there, Steve.
He's got the list. Numbers in front of him.
Well, Steve, yeah, Steve Jarvis 28.
Yeah, he was.
There you go. Yeah. Let's just move on, eh?
And what else? What
other
number?
17. Oh, mate, I had Gerrard 17 on one of my early
shirts. That 17's got a little bit like, it's an underrated under 23 of like, it's got a sneaky bit of history to it, because obviously McManaman, Gerrard.
Ragnar Klavan.
Yeah, it's Kurt Jones that now, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ragnar Klavan as well.
Of course, big Raggy.
Love him.
Gotta love him. Handsome. Why wouldn't you?
Destroyer of Burnley.
And women.
What? Well, okay. In like the positive sense.
Love making love.
Okay, sad. Yeah. Okay, because like
it wasn't a murder. I mean, it might have been. It's fine. Let me move on.
Wow. You know, those things that come out of your mouth and you remember they're like.
It's not
just three of us in a room chatting.
It's normally me. This is interesting. I've never been on this side of the fence before.
It was very much your, I look like Ragnar Klavan. Ragnar got all the girls.
A stretch.
That wasn't more of a stretch than I thought. I think you're more accurate implying that he was a sex pest, to be perfectly honest. Like, you know what I mean? Sorry, Ragnar, we know you're great.
My head looks so shiny.
It always does.
I know, it's horrendous.
There's a little film of sweat on there, like.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, get involved. Ragamuffins live. We've also got a sessions with them in the studio, and Mark Kenny as well. And me and Chris are going on tour with them in a few short weeks. We're going to LA.
Practicing me singing.
What?
Been practicing me singing.
How have you done that?
I'm doing backing vocals.
Oh, right, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Backing flattles. We just bring a keyboard, just put my finger on one note.
It's what I do. They've brought me in and they've replaced the H with me, if that's a thing. I don't know anything about music.
Outstanding.
A minor.
If you are on the west
all I know.
If you're on the west coast, Head to Cop Connect. Tickets are available now for LA and for Vegas as well. We're going to be over there. They're also going to be on the East Coast, but we're not there for that bit. They're doing New York and Boston.
How are they letting you lose in Vegas? You don't even gamble. You do. You don't.
No. I'm going to basically push, Vegas is wasting. I'm going to push Chris into some sort of dicey situations for a few days.
Vegas is wasting on you.
Me and Charlie are just going to wind them up and let him go. Can't wait. Cannot wait. Yeah, we had a boss time.
20 on red.
Have you got in touch with D'Lo Brown?
No, but I intend to.
Excellent.
Yeah. You better recognise.
And the Godfather.
Why not? Let's hope he still lives there. That'd be amazing. Go to copconnect.com if you want to get involved.
Right time, stand bears the footy chat.
Liverpool 9, Bournemouth 0. Obviously, we've got the final word show, which was done, which is over on Redmen Plus. Right now, there's obviously the whole raft of post-match content. There was the Underground podcast that Chris started up this weekend, which is going to be a regular thing post-match in the immediate aftermath inside the stands, getting hot takes on the footy. But I haven't really had a chance to talk about it since then with anyone. I've been stuck with me kids for a few days. They're great. They're really good. But I'm really tired. I want to talk about Liverpool 9, Bournemouth 0, so let's do it. I want to talk about Joe Gomez, Chris. I just thought he was
dead sharp. He was really good. I remember saying to someone after the game, maybe during the game as well, to James, is like, for a team that we've absolutely battered 9-0, the centre half stood out to me, and it was Joe Gomez who stood out. He just everything was clean and crisp, and he just dealt with things. And it very much, I've been really critical of Joe Gomez over the last sort of 18 months or something. You know, I don't think his pace has quite been there that he's had and stuff like that. But it looked early doors in that game and throughout that entire game that injury's behind him. It looked like he was playing with confidence, like he felt like he belonged next to Virgil van Dijk at the heart of our defence, because he was just brilliant in so many sort of phases of the play. And it was just the way it was just like, so I'm just going to deal with this and we're just going to move on and forget about it. And that, like, normally you do forget about it, but it stood out even then. Really, really good performance by him.
Forgotten how good his partnership was with Virgil van Dijk, because of course it's been usurped by Joel Matip, because we just had a full year of Joel Matip, which is absolutely unheard of, or certainly was up until last season. And he's been brilliant, and everyone adores Matip. He's got all the cult vibes going for him as well, and his mad runs and his mad adventures. T-shirt available on redmenmerch.com. So he's great. I love Joel, but I've always held on, going back to title winning season, that our best centre back pairing was Van Dijk and Gomez. You know, we went from being a good team to an impregnable team when they got that partnership up and running again. It's just been so unlucky. But our main criticism of this squad, Steve, we don't have enough lads in the prime of their careers. 23, 24, 25, 26. There's a lot of lads who are in the around 30, and there's a lot of lads who are teenagers. Joe Gomez, and I was shocked by this, he's 25 and he's just 25. Canate's coming up, and if he doesn't get it right, fine, Canate will be fine. But I really want Joe Gomez to be a success at Liverpool. He's got a potentially incredible career ahead of him still.
Yeah, he has, but...
fucking hell, Steve. Jesus Christ.
No, he has, but Joel Matip is better than him at the moment in time. So his job is to prove.
He's literally not.
Why not?
Because it's Joel Matip. He's like, what did he walk back into training yesterday?
2 days ago. Well, okay,
he's in perfect form then. That's what he does. He's in his sweet spot now, Joel.
Just about to turn up. But if your life depends on it, you put Matip in, you just would. So what Gomez needs to do, and again, I don't want to rehash too much because we spoke about this on the build-up earlier for Newcastle as well, but like, go and nail that spot down if you want it. It's yours. I think he had a good game against Bournemouth. I think he'd done well before that. I think, like everybody, he'd been up and down, probably one of the better ones, but I don't think I don't think in this spell he's done enough where he just plays all the time. Now, I think he's been good-ish. But I still think on the derby on Saturday, if Matip's fit, he's going to play.
That's the
thing. I just don't think he's... I like Joe Gomez, and I think there's a lot going for him.
I think he would. That might be true, but I don't think it's necessarily true in how you're saying it. There's a chance that Joe Gomez doesn't play the derby, but it won't be because he's not first choice. It's because we're playing two games every three.
I think it's a bit of both, though.
A game every 3.8 days between now and mid-November. There's a chance that you're just protecting him. What I'm saying is, I don't think if Matip started Newcastle and having started the weekend and having come on the game before, I'm not sure Matip would necessarily start.
Yeah.
Two games a week either.
My issue is that Gomez is the opposite of what Chris just says. he looks like he needs to play three games to be bossing the fourth.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a surprise that having now played a couple of times, his best performance is on the back of it. He looks like a lad who just needs to play and play and play. He isn't one you can drop in. And that role next to Virgil is going to be one where you just need to be able to drop in. Because whether it's Gomez, Matip or Konate when he's back fit, what Konate and Matip have shown an ability to do is rotate. And their levels not drop. We've never really seen that from Gomez. To an extent, at right back, he can do it where he'll do a job for a day. But I think at centre half, he always looks like a lad you think, oh, we need minutes. But you don't really, you're not.
But if he's had them now.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That, it's no surprise that was his best game. And that's what Jürgen's got to decide now is do I just leave him while the iron's hot and he's in form and then eventually he'll get injured and that's when I'll take him out. Or do I just go back to my tried and tested? So what it shows to me, mate, is that, like, to what Liverpool's squad depth and there's issues around places, centre half isn't one of them. Like, if he's your fourth best option, you're sorted. You're sorted for a long time, don't worry about it. We're sorted that left back, similar, where there's not that big a drop off between one and two. So,
interesting challenge, though, isn't it? I mean, because I've been looking at Joe Gomez for a couple of years, Chris, and again, I don't think his talent's ever really been in doubt. As we said, he's been desperately unlucky with injuries. He's not the lad who picks up stupid little niggles and misses a couple of games here, a couple of there. He just gets big injuries and different ones at that. I mean, look, I was having a look at his stats from last season. At no point in the Premier League does he even make consecutive appearances. You know, I'm talking off the bench. You know, like, he gets no chance to get anywhere near up to speed because Joe Matip's there and Canate's coming up as well. This feels like, I don't like to over-dramatise things, although also I do. He's not going to get many better opportunities. Canate's going to come back at some point, and if Matip's already back in training, that door's likely to shut on him at some point in terms of being the I'm Virgil's nailed on first team partner, because you'd bank on Canate to make that his own, given what we've seen more recently.
I don't know. Is it, honest answer, like, if he keeps performing the way he did at the weekend, he'll be first name on the team sheet until he's taken out of there. I don't think he's done anything wrong that he could lose the shirt right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Matip and Konate were that much better last season than what I've saw at the weekend from Joe Gomez either.
Yeah.
So there might just be more trust in the bank, recent trust for Konate or Joe Matip. My order would probably be Matip me number one, Konate me number two, Joe Gomez me number three right now. But he's proved in the title winning season and the season before when we won the European Cup that it's about who's playing well right then.
Yeah.
And Joe Gomez is playing well right now. And they look really comfortable and they've improved, you know, from the first couple of games. Like, we seem to sniff out the problem that we had with that ball through the middle, and Joe Gomez was able to deal with it. And that's not just the two centre halves either. It's the fullbacks. It's the midfield. Everything worked. Are we jumping on the Joe Gomez bandwagon a little bit too much after a 9-0 win? Probably.
Mm.
You know, they weren't really tested too much, but what he did well.
I think it's how good he is on the ball. I like, you know, again, he's got the recovery pace. Look, he's probably 2 inches shorter than we'd ideally like him to be. You know, if he was 6'3", 6'4" as well as our other centre halves, then you basically already have a better version of Konate there, wouldn't you? You could see him being the heir apparent to Virgil, because I think he's got that air about him, the air of confidence on it. It's how quickly he moves the ball, and you could see that again at the weekend. You know, he's not necessarily called into tons of defensive actions, but and I think it really helped him that split with Nat Phillips against Crystal Palace, where you got to see what happens when you just put a centre half in. A lad who can defend, and then you put an elite centre half in in replacement for him.
It was night and day, wasn't it? Yeah. For everybody to see.
The thing that's interesting for me about Gomez is, and it's going to be his issue, if he stays fit, I don't even think it's about the right side of centre half thing. I think we're going to rotate more of Van Dijk this run as well, because we're going to have to. As much as it was great that he got a good, strong run of games this time last year, coming back off the injury, we're not taking risks with Van Dijk this time around. And all the cup games, I think Gomez will start left side of centre half in them as well. And there's a chance if we've got a more favourable midweek or weekend game, whatever your big game is, Van Dijk definitely starts it. But 1-4, I think you might see Van Dijk come out and Gomez comes in there. So we might find between left side of centre half, right side of centre half, and right back, you might find that he actually has a spell of 10 games
in the big issue for me is who's your backup right back.
Yeah. Well, Calvin Ramsey's just getting himself back fit and available, isn't he? So hopefully that covers that issue.
Hopefully it does, but my gut feeling would Gomez is going to get more at right back over the next 2 months, let's say, until Ramsey's integrated, trained with the squad for more than 2 days since he signed for the football club.
Yeah.
And does that leave you with no option other than to use somebody else at centre-half?
Yeah.
Because you have to use Joe Gomez there.
Yeah, and I suppose...
And with the midfield injuries, James Milner.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. But now, really encouraging, you're right. Look, I see no reason not to jump on the Joe Gomez hype wagon up until the point where he gets another injury again and we put him back in a drawer and we focus on our shiny thing that's...
No, when you win 9-0, like, it's the centre-half who shine, isn't it?
Definitely. The other one who shone, there's a great old chat about him on the final word this week, but I love Harvey Elliott. There's
the
a weird moment that stands out for me in that game as being one of my favourite moments, and bear in mind, you know, we scored 9 goals and I could happily put any of those forward for this. But it's when Fabinho picks the ball up deep in midfield and he does a bit of the Thiago shuffle, turns his man and runs through the middle of the pitch. He cuts back across the run of his man. He's about to get taken out and all of a sudden Harvey Elliott just comes striding across him in front and he just rolls the ball into his path. And it was like everything that's been missing from our midfield this season, all encapsulated in Harvey Elliott just going, right, who needs me? Yeah.
Here I come.
And not just like I'm stood still, taking a pass and turn on it, looking for it. He's in motion. He's gliding into space. Steve, long may that continue.
He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant on it. And he's the next Liverpool superstar. You know, we're talking about now, you know, kids growing up who love Trent. He's the next one. Like, you know, when, I don't know, 10 years time, kids are being, they'll be Harvey Elliott, will be the posters on the wall and stuff. I'm convinced of it. Like, you see flash in the pan kids sometimes, like, oh yeah, he's got a bit about him. Like, this lad's on a different level. He's not just getting a game because people are injured. He's getting a game because he deserves to be playing. He's fantastic. And when Thiago's fit, Elliott plays still next to Thiago for me now. Play Hendo or Fab at the six, probably Fab with Hendo rotating there. He's made that right position his own. Like, the captain of the football club gets shifted, that's the left. Yeah. So he's
that
playing there.
That was a big call, because we were talking about it, weren't we, Chris, in the afternoon. We were walking around the ground and it was... in fact, we did it on the build-up show. Is, do you just move Harvey because, well, he's creative, he could fulfil more of the Thiago stuff. Henderson knows the right side, inside and out. But at Steve's spot on there, that was a big call. It kind of told you where Harvey sits in the manager's thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for a start, I think I put him on the right-hand side of the midfield because when he gets out to that right-hand side, he's dangerous because he's played there, so he understands the role. Also, you know, him linking up with Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's shown that he can do that. He knows how... him and Salah seem to have a mad little understanding between each other and stuff. Henderson's the more experienced player. I would always play a more experienced player out of position and let the young lad develop in the position that you want him in long-term. So it kind of makes sense to me. I think the big thing that I saw for the first time is I've seen him play well. I've not seen him pull the strings like that before. Yeah. And that's a big step up when you are pretty much the youngest lad in the team, first and foremost, and everyone's giving you the ball and looking for answers. Yeah. That's more important than where you play. It's like, these lads have all won Premier League and European Cups and they're playing the ball into your feet, expecting you to get them to the next level.
Yeah.
and get them further forward. And that's a big thing. Obviously, we've seen how good he is around the crowd. Like, he scores that goal and he's the first... It might be the second goal, actually. Does he score the third?
Second.
So he scores after the first goal. Sorry, he's G-ing everybody up around the ground again. But the biggest thing I think he's got, and maybe we don't know this as Liverpool fans, but someone's told me, as Liverpool, from people from Liverpool, is he's got a massive role to play in fans of Liverpool from around the country.
Yeah.
Because we've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, the young Scouser, in the side, but what he is to them is a boyhood Liverpool fan who's not from Liverpool. So that's why he's on all the shirts, is because everyone else feels like he's our poster boy. You've got the lads from Liverpool. You've got your Kurt Joneses and your Trent Alexander-Arnolds. He's me growing up down south, wanting to be a Liverpool player and all that. So he's got a huge weight on his shoulders as well. And more importantly than all of that, he's a fucking good egg. Yeah. Did you see him talking after the game? Like, obviously his nan and dad
had to turn that off because dusty in the room where I was watching that
one. It was a brilliant
one.
Interview because McDowell, wasn't it? He gave him time to recover. And he elongated this question such that Harvey could get himself together. So brilliant interview skills there. But like 19 years old and you're talking like that, and like you're on the telly and you're crying and you still manage to hold it all together, never mind the situation that you've been through, that should give us enough to know that he's going to make it as a world-class footballer. Yeah, he's a world-class person.
And he's a superstar. Like, there's no other midfielder in our team who can score that goal. No one's cutting in on the left foot and scoring that.
Yeah.
There's probably no one in the team other than maybe Mohamed Salah who can do that. Mm-hmm. It's a worldie.
It's the kind of one that you... We've had so many lads flatter to deceive, and you're like, oh, they've got something here. We hope they really come good and they hope they do whatever. And they never get a game. And when they get a game, you're like, oh, please, go on, just go and do something. And that moment never falls for them. Or you're always talking about, oh, we got that. Oh, the keeper made a save. Oh, if only it had gone in. He's just come in. He's coming in scoring goals for Liverpool. And, you know, you referenced it on the final word, but he, you know, he set himself a ridiculously high goal assist target in the summer. Like, we all had a bit of a laugh at the idea that he'd get 15, 20 goals and goal and plus. And I still think that's high. But it goes to speak to, he thinks he's going to be in the right areas of the pitch. But
he should be on the pitch. That's what it shows. Yeah. He plays, mate. I'm telling you now, if I'm picking Liverpool's best 11 for a game tomorrow, Harvey Elliott's playing. That's how good I think he is,
yeah,
and how good he think he can be. So if he's in our best 11 now, imagine how good he's going to be in 5 years. Like, he could be anything.
The thing that made the difference anything for that game, and look, we have to caveat this all with, it's Bournemouth, and Bournemouth, you know, a newly promoted side. You know, we'll talk about Scott Parker in a bit, but yeah, the manager made the wrong call in terms of the personnel and the formation and all that kind of stuff,
and the dress.
But in terms of how Liverpool trusted each other, the thing that was so lacking from that Man United game, Harvey Elliott was central to that, because he was. The reason that game isn't just a totally embarrassing mess in the second half is because he gets on the ball and he starts making stuff happen for us. We actually look like we're capable of causing some problems, but that you need everyone else to step up like that. It was all Milner throwing himself into slideys and Harvey Elliott being the only one who wanted the ball, whereas at the weekend everyone wanted it and everyone was prepared to have it and everyone was prepared to carry the ball and everyone was prepared to pay trustful balls into the feet and into space in front of people in front of them. So when everyone else, like Bobby Firmino, getting the fuck out the way, get up there, Bobby, float around the edge of the box for a bit and let Harvey Elliott take up that space and see what comes of it. I thought it was just so encouraging.
He dictates the tempo of the game so well, and to do that at that age is ridiculous. Like, he knows when to speed it up and slow it down. Thiago's usually the metronome for how Liverpool plays. Like, if Thiago wants us to play fast, we play fast, and if Thiago wants to slow us down, we slow it down. Well, this week, again, it's Bournemouth, and I understand, and Liverpool were 2-0 up in 5 minutes, so yeah, it's easier to do this, but it's fascinating. Like, ball's getting fizzed into him, so Van Dijk's giving him the ball, or Salah's giving him the ball. Yeah, Harvey, you make us tick, and he did.
We just get to speed.
I mean, it's really 45, and again, it's 45 minutes, because I know he gets the injury and stuff, but people love Carvalho, but Carvalho is way more raw than Elliot. Elliot is they're both fantastic players, and they've both got a lot of ability. Elliot already is just looking like a bit more polished. You can tell he's been in and around it a bit longer. Yeah, I think he's a superstar.
Both of them.
And let's not forget, this is like first 15 games of playing centre midfield still. Like, it's not a high amount of games he's actually played there. Yes, he started the season, and we think he's had a full year there, but we all know he's injured. Like, you know, we're nowhere near what his level is. Move on, I don't think he's in Liverpool's best side yet. I think he's a horses for courses, Liverpool's best side at the moment. I think there are times and places where Harvey Elliott doesn't make the side for those specific reasons. If he's young, he's still inexperienced at the top level. Like, if you're playing a Champions League semi-final against Atletico Madrid, I don't know whether I'm playing Harvey Elliott tomorrow because of that.
The thing about him is, again,
which is fine.
It's always back to the point. Someone said to me on one of the videos I did on my channel last week about the midfield options or whatever we had, and someone said, oh, Elliott's not good enough. You'd have seen it by now. It's like, it's like his fifth game for the club or something.
And we have seen it.
But that links into this point, is that if Harvey Elliott's not starting a game for Liverpool, I think we're edging towards a world where it's only because he's 19 and he can't play 60 games a season. He'll go down the Trent Alexander-Arnold route, where more and more you're going to be like, well, what game do you not want a lad who can take the ball in small spaces and drive things forward?
That's where it comes from for me, is that we've seen Jürgen do this with Joe Gomez and Trent Alexander-Arnold, and then all of a sudden he just doesn't change Trent Alexander-Arnold anymore. Yeah. I think we've got a season of Harvey Elliott getting more than 50% of the games in the middle of the park,
yeah,
but and then there's a point at somewhere down the line when he's just not taking Harvey out, and yeah. that's fine.
Yeah, that's it.
Because that's how you nurture young talent.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. I mean, and to the thing is, there's enough signs there that the games that he might not play are the ones you wouldn't expect. You know, he will play City and he will play Chelsea. He's played Chelsea already. You know what I mean? It might be Champions League semi-finals. It might not be the
midweek.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, you know, those cup games that he's meant that he should be in because he's the young lad. He's nowhere near those football matches. Because you can clearly see something there, doesn't he? They clearly have a lot of trust in. But we're judging him on only what we've seen. And there's just enough little bits in there that you could have an educated guess that he'll be playing in some of the big games for us. But until he does it, we won't know. But yeah, he's great. I love him. And as mentioned, Carvalho, very encouraging for him. Again, he gets the goal. He's threatened it a couple of times already off the bench. The fact that he gets it, that'll take the weight off. One goal I really want to focus on is Trent Alexander-Arnold's. Chris. I said this during the Community Shield. I think this is going to be Trent's coming of age season for us. He's 24. He's entering into that prime year. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure Gerrard's around that age for Istanbul. Maybe even slightly older. But when Gerrard gets to 24...
Was Gerrard born in 81?
80, I think. Yeah.
25.
Thereabouts. You know,
he was just before his 25th birthday.
So it's that point of when he hits 25 26 27, Gerrard is him becoming the best player on the planet, basically. And what Trent is missing from his game, and it's not everyone going, oh, he can't defend. I had it with Baz before. I've got on this upcoming Lab Bauer video. It's like people who don't watch Trent Alexander-Arnold seem to myopically focus on his defensive abilities. I've got a sneaky feeling he's going to score a shit ton of goals for us this season, and it'll just be undisputed, because that's where you go. I don't think his game is going to be improved by him being doing more tackles, because he does loads of that already. He's not going to be he's actually gone a bit faster, but he's never going to be lightning quick. But if he can all of a sudden, Chris, score 5, 6, 7 more goals from right back, as well as getting double figures assists. Yeah.
It's mad, because he's basically playing midfielder at the moment, isn't he, for us? We're asking him to do two jobs, and he's able to do it. Like, I mean, he was unbelievable. That goal, man, it just opens up, and the celebration was what got me, because he's sort of like, yeah, of course I'm going to do that if they don't come near me.
Yeah.
I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold, and I'm like, you're damn right you are, mate. You're fucking damn right. It's still going now. It was a hell of a shot, wasn't it? But he should get more goals, to be honest with you, because he gets into those situations often enough now.
And he's the set piece taker.
Yeah.
His goal record's not that good for someone who takes all the set pieces. Like, it was as best as 4 in 1920, and then it was 2 and 2. Are we counting the Community Shield this season? Let's give him it. So we scored 2 already this season. We equaled last season's entire tally in just a couple of games. So I'm with you, it is there for him. I'm being hypercritical, what a grave. You're going to take all the set pieces and you're going to be in and around that area. Probably should be scoring more goals. So I'm with you. I think we said this on the final, I don't want to repeat too much. I'm generally anti-shooting from 35 yards. I don't think many players should be doing it, but like, if anyone can, it's this fella. We saw him, we were speaking about Newcastle, he did it last season to them. He's got the ability. If you give him time and space, and he's going to be central, having someone who can do that is just a bonus in terms of, like, if you're trying to break teams down, because eventually you'd either let Trent shoot and he'll fight, you're scared of him, because that'll live in the memory. Fucking hell, if you give him space, did you see what he did to Bournemouth? He might only do it 3 times a season.
Well, he'll just slip Salah in, or he'll knock it sideways to Harvey Elliott, exactly. Or he'll nip it to Roberto Firmino, turn it around the corner, and he'll get the 1-2, and he'll be in.
But the difference between Bobby Firmino before we get Virgil's goal on half time, keeper obviously saves Bobby Firmino's one, it's the same type of thing. The defenders are running with Salah and with Luis Diaz, and Bobby Firmino strikes it. The difference between your centre forward striking the ball and your right back striking the ball, yes, Bobby gets it on target, but it's not a clean hit. You look at that to what our right back was able to do with the footy in the same situation. It's ridiculous.
It's a goal, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, look, I don't know what the record for free kick goals from a set piece is in the Premier League. I'd be shocked if it's over 10. Like, you know what I mean? It's probably around 5, maybe, something like that. You know, it's not a lot, but you need a couple to get stuck away every now and again. Like, the best thing about Liverpool, I thought, at the weekend was how good we were from set pieces.
Yeah.
Like, we absolutely mauled them. Was it like 3 or 4 goals we scored from a set piece? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, if we're going to get, you know, we know how good we've been from set pieces, whether it's Trent, whether it's Robbo, whether it's Tsimikas, it all seemed to work at the weekend. Yeah. That's just as important for me.
It's just glorious. Because it was one of those needs a big performance performances. And I think he'll have done his own head in with things. And we speculated a little bit about, I don't know what they've been doing at the AXA. We don't know how they've been training. And, you know, everyone's focusing on him not tracking back for the first United goal the other week. And it's criminal. It's absolutely criminal for anyone in Liverpool's team, let alone, you know, it's not even about him being the right back. It's there. The danger's there. Run until the ball's in the back of the net or it's cleared away. That's just a basic rule of how Liverpool play football. You go and play to the whistle. It's like kids are getting taught this on Sunday league pitches across the country. But I don't know that these lads haven't been continuing their pre-season fitness regimes into this season to make sure that they're ready for this week moving forward. And maybe he has just been a little bit held back, you know, in terms of his physicality or what he's been able to do. But I thought it was great. My favourite thing, just before we move on, is I like the fact that Trent wants to be this cool character. Like, he wants everyone to go, look how boss I am, look how effortless is. But Andy Robertson has got his number and he literally can't keep a straight face around. It's like Andy Robbo knows what his tickle spot is and he's trying to be this cool, calm guy and just, here comes Andy Robbo. He walks over to him and's like, yeah, got his moody, cool face on, and Robbo just whispers something in his ear and he creases. It's that the Leicester goal celebration when he does the Mbappe thing and he's trying to look dead sound and then they all jump on him and he bursts out laughing. I just, stupid moments, but I adore absolutely love that about
him. I tried to find the record. Now, 3 years ago it was 5 in a season from David Beckham in 2000-2001 for direct. He's got the most all time with 18. Ronaldo did 4 twice in a season and Madison scored a few, hasn't he? I don't know how many.
Ward Prowse just 14 he's probably the best of them all and he's got it isn't that many considering you're probably going to need two or three seasons really good. I'm with you, that goal going back to Trent. He's the closest thing we've had to Gerrard for a while and he plays right back. It's crazy, but like that, it reminds me of a Steven Gerrard goal. You're talking prime age Stevie Gerrard now. It's like that, he would score that goal early from like 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, around there. That was the type of goal that he would score.
He wants to grab the game and we're putting him into areas of the pitch where he can grab the game now, not just be that volume merchant from the right who just chucks balls into the box, which he never was. It's fucking horseshit. Like, I mean, when you're that good at something,
the ball for the own goal is unplayable, really. There's not that lad. All he can do is score an argue or let Luis Diaz score. Like, it was just one of those.
It's like being a move away from the volume merchant.
Everyone's a volume merchant in everything. Otherwise, you'd have one shot and score one goal in a game. Yeah.
The best strikers.
Alan Shearer's a volume merchant. Like, of course.
Look at him shooting.
Fucking course.
What's he shooting for?
I mean, what a stupid shout it is, anyway. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Ridiculous.
Just without naming the names, well, we will, because these just bodies the house and again. Chris just bodies the house and again. Not for the first time, won't be for the last time.
Wasn't me.
I know.
I'm not allowed to talk to him, you know what
I mean? We've had a super chat come in from Etcham Ul Hassan. Oh, actually, just want to point this out. It says 3 cheers for Ross for his service to Redmen. Yeah, Ross Chanley, it's his last day on Wednesday with the Redmen team.
He did the watch along at the weekend. He's got a show on Redmen Plus on Wednesday, Ross's final ever show. The Club Legends, the Ross leaving show last Friday as well. So he is melting it a little bit, isn't he?
We've got us leaving
due tonight as well. Yeah, there's plenty going on for him. Yeah, but yeah. Free cheers is a bit much.
Just do hip hip hooray, hip hip hooray, hip hip hooray in the comments if you're live, and that'll be absolutely great. That'll be even the fitting send up. But what a guy.
Tweet him, he runs the social accounts as well. He's still reading it for the next 24 hours, he's all over it, so yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Just lastly on the Bournemouth thing, Scott Parker, sacked or, you know, mutual term?
No, he got sacked because I have never heard a press conference of a man who wants to be sacked more in his life. He's basically saying, we are shit, you are not giving me no more money, I am not resigning because I will get loads of money for when you sack me. He was basically saying, what do you expect? I've got a team of championship players and you're not giving me no money to spend. Yeah, and he's basically put the ball in their court. He made the press conference made his position untenable. Yeah. I mean, he should have been sacked the second he started away.
Well, he could come. Thing is, though, he could come back out and go, "Oh, I'm really sorry. It was the heat of the moment. I was just
no." He's right,
is he? No, exactly. But what I mean is, this is why it's calculated on his part. I'm not having Bournemouth have made a shocking decision. Blah blah blah. Scott Parker wanted to get sacked as Bournemouth manager. He's protected his own value by basically going, "Well, I'm definitely getting relegated with these, and my star is going to fall as a result, and it's going to be in his head because he's not been back to stay up in the Premier League." So he walks away, gets to maintain the allure of a guy who can get teams out of the Championship but playing decent footy. Maybe there's a club in the Championship who's got him on the WhatsApp or whatever, you know, kind of, and saying, "Do that, but we'll also give you dough to spend while you're
doing." I don't think the decent footy things is the one, because if you listen to Bournemouth and Fulham, they don't think he does play decent footy. You know, Parker ball's this thing that he's talked about, and it's a bit boring, but it gets results of the Championship.
Well, to be fair, from the Oppo preview, what the general gist was last season, they did
all right.
They got out of the Championship playing a decent brand of football. They were playing 4-3-3 to get out the league. He's reverted to five at the back to try and
stay up.
And he's had some tough games this season. Oh, to be fair, yeah. It's ridiculous. And also, we think about when David Moyes left Everton and Martinez comes in. The club was ingrained in good football with Bournemouth. You know, Eddie Howe was there for a long time, and he taught them all how to play. So he's also got that off the back of it as well. So, look, I think it's ridiculous what he's done, to be perfectly honest with you, because, yeah, there's always someone who's desperate out there for a manager who can get you promoted and stuff, but, like, proving that you'll go out and speak about your owners is probably not a good look to the next owner.
He's fell out with
who wants to hire a manager.
Yeah,
like, he's fell out with Fulham,
yeah, so what are you doing, like?
Yeah, well, it's true, isn't it? And maybe that's just that thing of, though, you know, he's gone, "Well, look, I'm going to get beat every week. I've tried playing five at the back, and we got battered by the good teams. I've then gone, well, fuck it, I'm just going to try and play a bit of football." Got even more battered, and he's just obviously thought, "I just don't want to do this. I just don't want to manage a team that gets beat every single week." You know, again, maybe the Championship is level. Maybe there's another opportunity where he can reboot and try it again with someone else who's going to be a bit more. I mean, like, you know, I'm sure he's looking at what Forrest are doing and thinking, "God, if they give me half the players the Forrest have bought in, I'd be able to make a bit more out of this." But
I'm falling, to be fair, whoever takes that job, that's a big job.
Well, that's relegation.
You're almost accepting relegation.
You're getting someone who's going to bring them back up again, hopefully, aren't you? You know, that's,
yeah,
which is a bit sad to say 4 games into the season for
both. Yeah, because their statement said something about the sustainability of the club, which is basically not spending on money. So there's the players, make time, do what you can with them. It's a bit like the way Norwich go at it. We almost accept it's going to take something heroic to keep us up. We're not doing the Forest or whatever.
Yeah, because they've been through it enough times to know that they're going to go back down, and they can't mortgage the future of their football club on a season in the Premier League. Some owners can afford to do that.
The problem he might have is that he does the rest of this season, but it's playing like a really negative brand of football to just claw his way into the league, and then you get a reputation as being another Allardyce or another one of those British managers, and then he's forever pigeonholed into that, where he's never going to get
jobs if you're getting in that. He's taking the Alan Pardew role on the merry-go-round.
Yeah, yeah. But he's never going to get a job that he wants again. He's going to end up stuck playing footy he doesn't want to play, doing at clubs that have got no ambition other than to survive.
I don't think Thomas Frank did anyone any favours by keeping Brentford.
Without
spending, the newly promoted
teams, but Leicester were to title challenging teams, basically. Yeah, yeah, fucked it for everyone.
That's basically it, isn't it?
Yeah. Right, okay, we're going to talk about the transfer window, a little bit on Newcastle as well. We're going to take another quick break. We've got an incredible competition for people who join up as club legends over on redmenplus.com. Last chance saloon to win this prize.
Hey guys, it's nearly the end of August, which means we will soon be doing our club legend prize draw. This month's prize is this amazing framed, signed, shared by none other than Liverpool's European Cup winning captain, Mr. Phil Thompson. If you want to be involved in this prize draw, all you got to do is be a club legend subscriber on Red Men Plus. If you've never been over to Red Men Plus before, do check it out. Sign up for club legends. You'll get access to our Discord chat. You get free merch, you get discounted merch, and of course, entry into this competition. If you're a club captain over on Red Men Plus, do upgrade to club legend and you too will be in the prize draw. Time is running out, so go and do it now.
Yes, welcome back. Yeah, if you want to get involved with that incredible Phil Thompson signed European Cup winners shirt, then join up or go to redmenplus.com. If you're a club captain there, subscribe already, upgrade to Club Legend. If you want to just join us as Club Legend, you can do. You get a free piece of merchandise. You're going to get discounts of merchandise. You're going to get access to our Discord group as well. So we've seen... incredible example of this, by the way. That it's right, you don't need to run and fast. Just be quiet. They've been in the toilet, it's fine. Hopefully, at least you didn't have Mike with you this time. Twitter and comment section is full of knobheads when Liverpool aren't perfect. But if you come over and join our Discord group, it's full of really, really sound individuals. So you can have a good old chat about the Reds and everything around it with a bunch of like-minded, cool individuals as well. So yeah, and you're going to be entered into that draw last couple of days. I think we're drawing that out on Thursday. The winner of the Phil Thompson shirt will be picked, at which point we'll be revealing next month's incredible prize as well. Right, gentlemen, seamless. It's like you never left. Just two baby elephants charging into the room and fucking trumpeting down the microphones. Welcome back. It's like you never left.
I had to go fill my water up. I am post COVID throat.
Yeah,
is very much
is that a thing.
It is for me. So yeah, I'm a horse whore.
Brilliant. Okay, I don't really know how to follow that, to be perfectly honest. So let's talk about the transfer window. It's Tuesday afternoon. The transfer window shuts, I think it's like 11 o'clock on Thursday.
Slams shut.
Sorry, I apologise. The window slams shut on Thursday night. Jürgen's kind of...
Ish,
maybe. Literally the word ish, has put the brakes on a touch from the optimism from the embargoed section at the weekend of the press conference. He doesn't say we're not signing anyone, but he does once again reiterate that it's difficult to get players of quality. It speaks to me that they've maybe got one or two irons in the fire, but they're not straightforward, and we might end up in another maybe Fabio Carvalho-style deadline day situation where they're trying to get something late wrapped up. It might be dependent upon other factors.
Yeah, I don't think we're signing anyone anymore.
Yeah,
as well.
The optimism's gone.
Yeah,
big time.
I'm with you. It feels to me like there was someone they wanted, which is why he said at the weekend, then we weren't in for a midfielder, and then everyone told me we should be, and now we are, so I was wrong. So he basically said he hinted that we're probably going to sign a midfielder, and then it's today we're like, well, ish, and if we don't get one, it's absolutely fine. I'm happy with what we've got. Well, that's a lie, because there's a reason you're trying to sign someone. It can't be both, but
it can, because to the point. What he said all along is he doesn't want just some bum playing in his midfield. You know, he doesn't want a shitty no mark.
Yeah, but then there was obviously players who he wanted or that someone somewhere wanted. So, but he can't come out and say we're fucked if we don't get a midfielder because how can you say that to your squad? So I get what he's doing. It'll be hugely disappointing, to be honest. I think it'll be a crying shame. Listen, it's not going to be the end of the world or the catastrophe. And I got his point of. Whatever happens, just get to Friday, and at least people might just fucking cheer up. And the worst you're going to get is that I told you so. People every time we don't win a game, which again, that's going to happen anyway. But
it happens regardless.
It happens all the time. Yeah, he basically said that we've got a very active fan base.
There's people who still think Zeljko Buvac leaving and not being replaced by Zeljko Buvac was a.
There's all kinds, they should be signing a midfielder. And Sutton's happened, and I don't know. Again, we would be purely speculating between Jürgen saying what he said at the weekend to today. It might just be that he thought he had something and it didn't quite turn out right or something. Who knows? But I don't think they will, but I think they're going to carry on trying, if that makes sense.
I think Naby Keita is central to this because we're looking at what we've got and I think, you know, on that right-hand side, Harvey Elliott, we've talked about him, he's going to play a lot of football. Jordan Henderson can still do it. He's more than capable of doing a job down that side. But we're talking about like what Thiago brings to the team in terms of being good on the ball and that kind of stuff and beyond. And Naby very much being the understudy to that. And then Kurt being maybe the understudy to that. Is that because Naby can do both sides of the midfield in addition to it, if he's being a bit of a twat behind closed doors, which we don't know and that's pure speculation, that he might just go... Well, he's injured and he's being a bell end. So he wants to move. He's not going to sign a new contract. And they were obviously hopeful of that in weeks gone by. That I just wonder whether that's been the inciting factor on it. But then, goes back to our point from last week, is that Naby Keita is really, really, really good at football when he plays and he's available. So finding someone of that calibre is not as easy as easy a thing as is often made out. Yeah. I know we can all look at the names, and God knows I have done. I've done countless chapter and verse on this over the last couple of weeks. I'm sure we'd all happily take a punt on one from Frenkie de Jong, Yuri Tielemans, James Maddison, Ruben Neves, Conrad Lehmer. Add another probably handful of players.
It's more the case, I suppose, that there's players who have moved in the last few weeks who you think might have been, like, who knows, they might not have wanted Nunes, they might, you know, the lad who's gone to West Ham is a Paqueta's lad, maybe, but again, it's all it's put to maybe, we don't know this. Liverpool do have the no dickheads rule, and that maybe there's some people, I put on Twitter, like maybe there's people who have fallen foul of that, but for me, Keita's going to leave next summer, I'm convinced now. I think it'd be sorted if he wasn't. Ox, we know he's going to go, Milner's going to go, so even if it is a case of, like what he did with Diaz, you've got one too many, because next season, you're going to, rather than having to get three next year, if you've already got one, you only have to go and get one or two.
I'd be surprised if we, I think we'll buy a midfielder before next summer. If we don't get something done in the next couple of days, it wouldn't shock me at all if something dropped in January and it was more just something from now. You know, like not, like they're going to go from fresh again in January, like a la Ozan Kabak kind of situation, but it wouldn't say they went, this is just not enough time to get the mechanics of a deal, a deal for a good footballer done in that time. Maybe.
The other thing that they consider, and we don't want them to, of course, is there's still got to be value for money. Like, it's still got to make sense financially for them to be able to do it. And when everyone knows your back's to the wall and there's 2 days left of the transfer, and it's not something that Liverpool fans want to hear, that, you know, we're being held to ransom and stuff, but, like, you can't get the great deals that we've been known for over the last few years with 2 days to go. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, they probably should have changed the transfer window in January. And put it back some because of the World Cup and, like, you know, having the same amount of games, roughly speaking, in the season and stuff like that. I don't know whether that's even true, to be honest with you, but it actually, like, on the surface of things, we probably less Premier League games into the season, aren't we, by the time January rolls around? Mm-hmm. So we're nowhere near as, you know, it's nowhere near as long a gap that we've got to wait. In time, it's exactly the same, but we're missing 6 weeks of footy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, I wonder if the fact that Jones has just come back and Thiago is close, because maybe the prognosis on some of the injuries wasn't as bad, so the less desperate. I don't know. I think that, again, that might be a mistake because you're still relying on players.
Well, it's the same people, isn't it? And there's no guarantee they don't get injured.
The names that you've just mentioned there, are any of them the same?
No, they're all different type of players, Andy.
Right, so there's the fucking problem for me when I hear that list of names. I'm like, Maddison, really? Okay. And Neves? Completely different.
We don't know what type of I was going to say,
that's a really bizarre, like, yes, in isolation, if you said to me, would you take him? Yes. Would you take him? Yes. Would you take him? Yes. Why are all these names the fucking same?
Well, because,
like, that's a warning to me. I'm like, we don't know what we want, but are you just filling these names in?
Well, I think
none of it makes sense.
There's that, because this list has been formed of players largely that people have suspected are likely to move or would be available for a transfer. But also, we need three midfielders potentially next summer. And if you're talking about replacing James Milner, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita, will you buy this three completely different midfielders anyway? So you could probably pick up any type of midfielder at this point. And as long as they're embedded, there would be a value to it, just to speculate around that point. But the unifying factor, what I discovered just doing a little bit of digging into most of these, is that they're all 25. They're literally, to a man, 25 years old, and the better ones amongst them have got really good injury records. You know, I've got a couple of seasons, with the exception of Lehman, who missed the 2021 season with a broken ankle. Yeah, he missed a couple of games last season in individual ones, but most of them have got, I even got to Nicola Barella as well, we didn't mention before, hasn't missed a game in three seasons or whatever leading up to it. They're kind of unifying factors, but you're right, in terms of stylistically, it's odd that there's no, but then again, it's like you can't replace Thiago Alcantara, so you might have to do some outside the box thinking. Also,
A list of who you can get. I mean, you might not want any of them.
Yeah,
that's the thing. That's a list of names who might be available.
I think there's a bit of smoke around Lehmer, and there's a bit of smoke around Frenkie de Jong, and there's been a little. And we've seen us link with Tielemans in the past.
Yeah, I'm not having some of them.
Neves for that matter.
I think it was Lehmer. How do you pronounce his name?
Lehmer.
I think he was the most likely, and maybe they've been knocked back on that one. Maybe they thought that's the general news we're getting, but. Yeah, they're not going to panic buy. It's just what they just won't do it. And sometimes I really think they should. And then it's like devil on the shoulder, angel on the shoulder, like, don't panic buy, don't panic buy, don't panic buy. And I was like, yeah, but otherwise you're going to be shit. And what I don't agree with is people go, yeah, but they waited for Van Dijk and they waited for Konate, but they knew they were going to get them. They were deals that they knew were done. It was just a matter of time. Like, I don't think, I might be wrong, maybe Henry Winter's tweet the other day was like, I can't wait to see Bellingham next year for Liverpool. Maybe that was just a slip of the tongue, or maybe he didn't notice. But like, if they know for a fact that they've got Jude Bellingham boxed off, then they're not going to panic buy. But if they don't know that, and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, then it might be worth just being a little bit more proactive. But like I say,
yeah, you've got your PS5 on pre-order, so you can't empty your bank account today, because when they come to ask for the money, the money's got to be in your bank account otherwise you won't have your PS5.
Exactly.
No, it's frustrating though, isn't it? I mean, there's some reasonably priced options out there, and obviously our good footballers as well that we would feel would improve the quality of the side. I still think they might do something. He did say
yeah, his exact words were, when he was asked about bring me field, and he says ish, and then he said somehow yeah, but the closer we get to the last minute, the more unlikely it gets. They're still looking. He's not just said no, we're not doing this. What he's saying is,
just to be clear, they're not looking. They're either in talks with someone or they're not in talks.
But what they're saying is it's not guaranteed. He's not going to go. Like, I remember the press conference he did before Thiago, when he knew he was getting Thiago, and he wasn't allowed to say nothing, and he was basically laughing, going, I can't talk about this. And then he'd done the embargo section straight away, and he was like, I am so sorry, but yeah, it was Aaron Thiago. I just couldn't tell you. It's not that. He's basically saying, well, yeah, something's happened. We're trying to get something
done. We haven't had the embargo bit yet, though, have we?
I don't know.
There normally is on Premier League ones, isn't there? So it could be like, I don't know if they do it midweek, is your point, I guess.
Because there's a game.
It might come out tonight. It's a bit weird that it's Tuesday and we're not hearing anything, unless there is going to be, and Liverpool have got prize for this, it's just bang.
Well, Luis Diaz wasn't happening until it was happening.
Yeah.
They're doing something. I think what he's trying to do is he's a little bit like breaking us in gently. We're trying, but there's no guarantees that this is going
to
happen.
Maybe he just wants to buy in from the fans over the weekend. Maybe he just wants us all to be happy, and he just wants everyone to stop thinking about worrying about buying a midfielder. So we said we're going to buy a midfielder. Everyone got behind the team. We absolutely smashed Bournemouth. Confidence is restored, and the team had a little bit of pressure. And now it's like, we just couldn't quite get one over the line. Oh, welcome back, Curtis. And all the things I've been saying all along, everyone's back in training.
What I would say though is that we saw in January they're willing to go deadline day. Luis Diaz happened late. Fabio Carvalho was literally happening until the clock ran out. So the days where you think, oh, Liverpool get everything done early, well, they kind of proved that wrong last winter. So there's a chance that we are 10 o'clock on Thursday and they're scrambling round trying to get X player in for a medical or whatever.
And I was leaving it this close, because they're not going to play for Newcastle, and it's going to be too early for the derby regardless, even if you sign them today, probably borderline. Leave it till deadline day.
Just drum it up.
Yeah, just fuck it. Fun, innit? You know what I mean?
What are you saying here? Like, the deal's done. We're just going to sign it right at the last minute and make everyone
it's
look
probably
like
not done yet. But I was just like, well, there's no rush. I've got two days to box this. And if it happens to bleed out, because we did this with Oxlade Chamberlain, we got it agreed like 10 o'clock the night before deadline day. What are you doing? I was like, what are you doing, you morons? Just keep it till the morning when all the eyes are on. And all of a sudden, you fill the airwaves. Liverpool have gone and done this, and they've identified a problem, they've solved it, gives everyone a big boost.
Julian Ward, is what you're telling me, is he's got shares in that flight scanner website, and he wants people on there checking the flights of where they're leaving and what's landing at Liverpool and stuff. Yeah. He's got adverts all over his website, mate. He's waiting for it. That's what it's come down to.
Reminds me, like, I have to pick the kids up at 2:45 and it's 2 o'clock and I've got nothing to do, and the sensible thing to do would just be to leave now and be early, but I will leave at 2:20, and then I'll get stuck in traffic and be late. And I was sitting there going, what did I do for them? There was no reason for me not to go. Yeah. I just chose not to. Yeah. Maybe Julian's like that. He's just, you know what, I'm easy, it's chill. If I get it, I get there. If I'm 5 minutes late, we'll sort him in January.
The point on all this, though,
you had a wank, didn't you?
The point on all of this, though, answers that question on podcast extra following this podcast. Yeah, I mean, look, to speak to the complication of doing deals, anyone who's good enough to play for Liverpool is probably one of the best players in another football team right now, and this is what we've got. I mean, we saw it even with, like, the Kabak deal. We couldn't get the Kabak deal done any earlier because they needed to get Shokhdan Mustafi from Arsenal, and Arsenal were desperate to get him off the books. It's like buying in a chain, isn't it? It's not necessarily like X has to move, so X, Y, and Z. But
we need to find a first time buyer, Paul. Yeah. Absolutely. Or a first-time seller, or yeah, whatever the equivalent of that would be.
Free transfers and children is what you yeah, is what we do. But
and
we
a league that's cancelled
either of them do
for
we?
The season.
Yeah, Ross Barkley, welcome to Liverpool.
Oh, oh my God! Don't.
Imagine. I'm not even going to say anything because that we might end up. Okay, cool. Newcastle Wednesday. They've got loads of their good players out injured. That's sound. I'd rather. Yeah, it's true. I'm glad we're playing this at Anfield. I think a couple of games just to get the spirit back, get the feeling back before you go to the derby. I want to go to Goodison Park feeling like anything, like we can win any game of football, as opposed to when we went to Old Trafford where I had no idea where we were going to buy a win from.
Yeah, I mean, where's St. Maximin up to? He's still fine, isn't he?
He's probably not going to play.
He's not going to play. Well, then we should be fine because he's the best player by a fucking country.
It's St. Maximin, Guimaraes, and
Callum Wilson. Guimaraes is out, and Maximin's unlikely. Trippier's probably going to play.
He's just the one that turns that team from average to above average, just all on his own. He's just an absolute nightmare to play against. Like, he'd be looking at Trent Alexander-Arnold, thinking I can get something out of this game, and he'd be looking at Joe Gomez, and he'd probably. He's full of confidence that he'd be thinking he could do it with Virgil van Dijk if he was over there.
He gave Kyle Walker a ton of time, didn't he? And he's got full of pace. So yeah, again, we've done the build-up here. I don't want to repeat too much. But it looks like they might not be out, they might not be playing. Look, it's more obviously looking ahead to the derby. We went through the fixture list, didn't we? And Liverpool, we sort of the fixture list is favourable. It still is. Like, it's still favourable fixing this. Because we haven't banked, Bournemouth, Newcastle, Everton, our three games, Liverpool should win. We're just in the middle of that now.
Yeah.
The fact that we didn't beat Fulham and Palace didn't change the fact that the fixed list has been kind to us.
Yeah.
And now that hopefully we're in form, Liverpool should be able to get themselves on a roll.
We just need to win some fucking games of football and ignore all the noise around it, because it was tough. Because, I mean, even Chloe, we were having in the WhatsApp group during the game at the weekend, we mentioned, like, flashbacks to the last game of the season here in the City result, and the lad next to me, Sam, said, oh, they've won 4-2, and I was like, I don't give a shit, we've just won 9-0, I don't give a fuck what Man City are doing. There was a little part of me when I was mentally working out how Liverpool had the worst start of the season ever, and we were 2 points behind Man City at one point, and it was, but it's the path to madness. Liverpool just need to beat Newcastle, they need to beat Everton, and we need to get our heads up and look around. Hey, you know what, go and beat Napoli, get your Champions League, all that up and running, and then give it a little while. Arsenal will lose a game of football eventually. City will lose games of football. It showed to me, not that it's going to be all of a sudden swing straight back into our favour, but City are vulnerable, and that's good. You know, you could argue they've won the game 4-2, so you go, well, they're not vulnerable, but they are.
It was 2-0 and it could have been 3 for a different
two teams different now day. Have gone and give them a hell of a game. And more teams will copy that because they'll think, why not? What's the point? We'll lose regardless, so we might as well go and try and take a few swings at them. So yeah, we'll see on all that.
Oh, so it's a night game at Anfield. Yeah. You're always up for a night game at Anfield.
And we've had the first game of the season now, where we've had the early afternoon with the sunshine, so we can have a night game now because we've had the proper season opener, which we should have just played. This would be all fine if we just played at Anfield instead of a Monday night for the first game. This all would have been fine, I think. But anyway, right. I was going to talk about the build to the World Cup, but we'll do that. We'll maybe do that next week when we're in the thick of it. But yeah, two games a week now until the World Cup break. A game, including the international break, a game every 3.8 days. So strap yourselves in.
It's mental, isn't
well,
it?
To the point, you know, we're here throughout all of that. So if you want to join Redmen Plus, you're never going to get better value for money in terms of how much content you're getting than between here and the World Cup.
It's absurd, really.
Yeah, genuinely ridiculous. So there's tons of stuff over there. Yeah, we've got to have the podcast extra. So if you want more of us three idiots, but completely and utterly uncensored, chatting loads of random shite. Have you ever liked the MXP podcast? You know, Steve once christened the extra is basically MXP. So if you want that, it lives on in Podcast Extra. So yeah, come over, we're going to do that live. If you're here live now, head over to Redmen Plus in about 10-15 minutes. We will be live over on Redmen Plus, so you can come and do it. If you're after the fact, you can get it in video or in podcast form, as well as a whole host of other excellent content. And if you're a club legend, you're entered into the Last Chance Saloon draw for the Phil Thompson signed European Cup 77 shirt as well. God, I need to stop. Right, breathe. Podcast over. Thank you so much. You guys are incredible.
And if you've watched on Twitter, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, Sal. See you back here for more podcasty goodness next week.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.